On Sunday, October 1st, a lone gunman opened fire on a large crowd of concertgoers in Las Vegas, killing 59 people and injuring over 500. I sat and watched the news the following day with a knot in my stomach, feeling heartbroken over the loss of life, angry at the sick bastard who did this, and frustrated that I couldn't do much to help. I tried to channel that energy into doing something useful, so I took to Twitter and tweeted out as much news, community information, and donation information as I could. I then reached out to Michael from the Vegas Bright podcast and Saul, the editor of the Vegas Bright blog, and asked them if they would like to join me to talk about and record our thoughts about the day's events. We got together over Skype, and to be honest, many times we were at a loss for words as we were still processing the enormity of Sunday's horrific event. There's a lot of information here, and don't worry about writing it down, because I'll post it all in the show notes, as well as links to Michael on Twitter and Saul on Twitter, and to the Vegas Bright blog. We took a crack at trying to fill in some of the blanks, and we share our personal experiences as members of the Vegas community who don't actually live in Vegas, which is something that I think is unique to Vegas. I can't think of any other city in the world that people love so much that they'll read blogs about it and listen to podcasts about it. I think it's because in some small way, you and I feel like Vegas belongs to us and we belong to it. And when something like this happens, we feel like it happened to us, even though we don't live there. It's also worth noting that I invited Scott from the Vital Vegas blog and podcast to join us, but understandably, since Scott lives in Vegas and works at the Fremont Street Experience, he had his hands full and wasn't able to be with us. But if you would like to stay up to date with news and relief efforts going on in Vegas, I recommend you follow him on Twitter also. One last thing, I'd like to thank everyone who helped disseminate emergency information and relief effort information on Twitter. This episode really isn't the place for shoutouts, so I'll be talking about this more on a future episode of the Faces and Aces podcast, but I do especially want to thank the members of the podcast community, Podern Family, for helping to spread the word beyond our Vegas circle of friends. They shared the information about the Las Vegas Victims Fund with their audiences, and they also made donations, and for this, I can't thank them enough. I didn't necessarily have a huge master plan for this. It's the kind of thing where being part of the Vegas community and we are one of the torchbearers for carrying the conversation, I just thought it'd be good to have a couple of fellow Vegas enthusiasts to come on and we could talk about today's events, maybe give a couple of news updates, project what we think, what's going to be happening in the city in the future, and also pass out some useful information for anybody who's hearing this.
Yeah, well, I guess major update would be as of right now, the numbers right now are still at 59 people killed and 525 injured. So
there was a recent number change, though, as far as the amount of weapons that were found. 23 guns were found in the hotel room and 19 found at his house.
As well as explosives.
Yep.
I just can't think, how does someone get 23 guns up to like a hotel room? You know, he must have gone up and down numerous times with different suitcases just loading up that room over the course of a day or how.
Yeah,
you know,
well, that's actually
days.
That's actually something worth discussing because I've seen that question come up a number of times on Twitter today. People are wondering, how does a person get that many guns into a hotel room? And since we're not in Vegas, we can only speculate, but I know that he's been there since Thursday, so it would make sense that he would just take multiple trips to his room carrying guns on different occasions.
Yeah, it's not even the guns, it's like the ammunition, you know, to bring all that ammunition up to the room and have it not be obvious by hotel security or other people staying at the hotel. I mean,
yeah, and how did like
exactly,
and the fact that, you know, room service didn't come in and notice anything. So there's also they're wondering if he had the do not disturb sign on. And from what I understand, he had it set up in there. He had two tripods to mount his guns on. He had scopes and he had loaded weapons all around, so he can just drop one and pick up another if he needed to. So, I mean, this is something, I mean, obviously it was premeditated. He thought about the location. You know, he chose someplace that was high up and had a view. He chose a corner suite because he can get two different angles out of it. You know, and this is something he put plan into and made it happen. And the thing is, you know, for his family, he's like, oh, no, great guy, gambler, you know, and but obviously something is wrong there. You know, that's.
Yeah.
I think that's part of what really is eating away at me is that he is still such a mystery that we don't know a lot about him. Actually, what is his name?
Stephen Paddock.
And I did notice one place put Stephen C. Paddock, and he did not have a Facebook page. That was something that I noticed because people were researching, trying to get some background on this guy. The guy's a mystery. Almost no digital footprint.
And the guy seemed to be a responsible guy. Was contracted through Lockheed Martin for some type of accounting job. So, had some real estate investments. So, the guy seemed like a normal retiree in Las Vegas, just living life, gambling, having a good time. Nothing out of the ordinary, really, according to his neighbors and his family.
Yeah, and he was kind of well off.
Yeah. He had a couple of properties in Florida, and I think it's like California and there in Nevada. So
yeah, he's got one in Mesquite, Nevada. Yeah. He's got one in Reno, and he has something over there. He has a property in Florida as well. And in one of the properties, they're sending in a bomb squad because they're worried that it's booby-trapped. So they're doing a thorough search with a robot before they even enter.
Yeah. That's the gist of it. I think most of the people have been watching the news all day today, or at least caught the evening news where there's a good recap. Unless there was something else that you noticed and you wanted to add in terms of news, was there anything that?
Yeah. One weird thing was, I guess the guy's dad was a bank robber in the 70s too, and was on the FBI's most wanted. So, there is some kind of a seedy past with his family.
Yeah, I saw that too, where his brother was saying that they were born on the lam.
Yeah, I saw that. So, yeah. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's a little odd piece of information. Did you guys hear about how they located and pinpointed the shooter?
No.
I heard a bunch of different things. I remember I saw a video of the person shooting out the window, and that's when they realized it's coming from the building. And the guy on the ground gave a floor estimate. And when you saw the video, you saw the sparks, coming from the gun in that window. And then from what I understand, it has something to do with smoke detectors or something.
I heard smoke detectors too, where the gunfire created all this smoke and the smoke detectors went off. I actually heard a 911 call of the guy in the room on the 31st floor. He called it in and he said, I hear the gunfire. It's directly above me.
Wow. So
I think maybe a combination of those things helped the police find where he was. But I think ultimately it was a guy on the 31st floor who said it's the guy on the 32nd.
Did they interview him or they just played the phone call?
They played the phone call.
Oh, okay.
How did you react to it this morning? Saul, how did you react to it this morning?
Yeah, well, like I tweeted out, my sister was actually at the concert for fiance, my future brother-in-law, is big country guy from Wyoming. So they were there having a good time. They actually he witnessed three people get shot and presumably die. So they're a little shaken up about that. He didn't get home until about 5 o'clock today, going through all the security and being interviewed by police, getting their statements and all that stuff. It's just kind of surreal, When it happens and you read about it you read about it online, you see it on TV, it's one thing. But when it happens so close to home, when you have someone who's actually there and involved, and you get like a firsthand account, it kind of hits home and you realize it could have been like anyone, it could have been your best friend, your family, it's just completely surreal.
And Michael, how did you respond to it when you first saw it this morning?
My wife woke me up because she gets up to leave for work earlier than I do. And my wife's like, did you hear about what happened in Las Vegas? And I'm like, I'm half asleep. So it takes me a while for my marbles to line up or whatever they're supposed to do. And I'm like, no. And she said, yeah, there was a mass shooting. 500 people are injured. 50-something are dead. And she's talking about Mandalay Bay. And I'm like, what? And she's like, yeah. I was like, wow, what? And I couldn't make sense of it. And, she had to get going. And I'm like, all right. And I remember just being like, what? And I just drifted back to sleep. And then I kept dreaming about it. So I woke up and I was like, okay, let me turn on CNN or something and find out what's going on. And I think it took a while for it to set in. It's, it's just a complete tragedy that something like this happened. And especially, it's a tragedy when it happens anywhere, but that's my adopted city, And it's just like, I've always feared that something big and bad would happen in Las Vegas, because that's just how life is now, I suppose. But it was just couldn't believe what was happening. I remember just there, just like watching the news and just trying to absorb what was happening, getting on the phone. I was like, oh my God, how are my people? So reached out to like some Vegas people we all know. seeing that they were okay and everything. And yeah, it was just one of those days today where it's you know, just kind of hard to take in. But the flip side of that is that what happened, it could have happened in any city. What happened doesn't define Las Vegas, but what did define Las Vegas is how everyone came together immediately, and the first responders who went towards where everybody was running from, and all the people who went out and supported and who got on the GoFundMe page and donated money, and people who were bringing in food and supplies, and you know, people just uniting together. I think that's the part to me that defines Las Vegas. It's one of only a few cities out there that are that great and that strong.
Adding a little to what Michael just said, I think what makes it even more shocking too is that, like, you know, Las Vegas to us is like, you know, Disneyland to adults. So when you hear, you know, deadliest U.S. shooting in Las Vegas, it's kind of like hearing deadliest U.S. shooting at Disneyland. You know, it hits home to a lot of people because that's where we go to have our fun time, you know, go out and kind of let loose and leave all our worries at home. So when something like this happens in Las Vegas, it just magnifies the tragedy even more, I think.
You know, I think there's something interesting about Las Vegas, because when we go to the city and we are either at a bar or sitting at a table or even just walking down the street, there's this weird feeling that everybody is your friend. You can make jokes and comments with a complete stranger and you both get it because you're in that city. So there's this bond, this kinship with the other people that are in the city. And so when we're not there and something happens there, I think we automatically feel that connection with the people who are there, the people who work there, and also the people who are visiting there. And I think that's why a lot of us really felt that sucker punch this morning when we got up and saw the news. And for me, when I got up, my wife told me about it. She said, you may want to turn on the news and check out what's going on. I turned it on and saw it. And immediately, boom, I went to Twitter and I wanted to see who was tweeting about it. And it was this kind of this weird, surreal thing where tweets meant life. They tweeted about it. They're safe. Good. Let's move on. You know, just look around and see who's commented. And anyone who didn't have any Twitter activity since last night, I reached out to privately and just wanted to make sure they were okay. And just all, I'm still waiting. No, actually, the last person who was on my list finally got back to me. And so it's been kind of a day of pins and needles and just making, you know, checking in. And I know, even though the people directly are fine, but there are friends of friends who are impacted. And that's heartbreaking because these ripples just carry out to the rest of us and we feel their pain.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I have a friend of mine. He texted me earlier today and there are a number of stories. If you have any, please share them. But my friend texted me and said that his friend's sister got shot. She was hiding under a trailer and she called her daughter to say goodbye when she got hit. And she's okay. She got released today. But at that time, her phone died. And so when she got hit, her kids thought that they just lost their mom. And it wasn't until several hours later. Yeah. That she was, you know, after the hospital or in the hospital, she was able to get back in touch with them and say that she was okay. But it's stories like that. Yeah, it's insane. These stories that are coming out of the city. You shared one earlier in regards to your sister and your brother-in-law. Michael, do you have any personal stories from the city?
The first thing this morning, I was just checking on, and I was doing the same thing you did. Who didn't tweet? You know,
yeah.
And just reaching out, making sure people are okay. It turns out Big AZ Marty was out there, and I remember him saying he was going there. I wasn't aware that he was still there, and I remember hearing that from you and Saul, and just being like, whoa, what's going on? But he's okay, so that's good. But as far as any other personal connections out there, I mean, luckily for me, no, everyone's fine on my end. That part is okay.
I'm not exactly sure where to go from here. Like, I know I want to wrap with giving out some information on what people can do, because today, I know I've had a sense of helplessness and I spent most of the day saying, okay, how can I turn that weird energy into something productive? So I have that for the end of the show, but do you have anything that you want to drop in here?
Yeah, well, I was just kind of thinking, where does Las Vegas go moving forward, you know, from here as far as big events, especially outdoor events? You know, you got, you know, things like Life is Beautiful that just wrapped up, EDC coming up next year. I mean, you got the Golden Knights games that are going to be starting here soon. You know, Raiders. plus all the boxing and MMA, all the festivals. How are they going to address security issues moving forward? What's going to be done?
That's a good point. How does this change the city?
Well, I think that what, you know, the thing is, something like this isn't 100% preventable, but there are ways to deter the crap out of it. And basically what that's going to be, as much as it might be a big task, is that they are going to need to step up security. And if this means that they're going to search your bag while you're in the check-in line, that's basically what it means. You know, I was born and raised in New York City, was there, still living out there when September 11th happened, and then you saw security changes happen, and they somehow weaved all these security changes into the new normal. You know, and the new normal meant that sometimes you'd walk in, and where there wasn't a metal detector, there was. Where you weren't getting a bag, you know, searched, it was getting searched. And that continues on to various places you go to out there. You'll walk into St. Patrick's Cathedral, and they're standing there, and they'd like to see what's in your bag, you know. And after a while, you just sort of get used to it. And I think, you know, Wynn already started today. Wynn Resorts started checking bags for people who are entering the hotel. You know, they've got some more staff members and started doing visual checks. Now, I'm not sure if in the future, you know, hotels are going to do the whole scanning system that you get with the TSA. I think it's entirely possible. And it would just be one more step for, you know, visitors. So what basically means is you go to your baggage concierge, you drop off your bag, and you get your ticket number, and then you go and check in. And by the time you're done checking in, your bag is done being searched, and you go pick up your bag and go to your room. And it could be that simple. But as long as something like that is in place, you know, it'll definitely deter anyone from thinking about showing up with multiple trips and multiple bags and, you know, having a, you know, making a sniper's nest up in their hotel room. But that's going to be one of the things that has to be done. I mean, for indoor events, when I went to the Park Theater for the Hans Zimmer concert, it was the same thing. You know, you had to empty your pockets. If you had a purse, put it up on the table, and people went through it, and they were just looking for anything. I'm not sure what they were looking for exactly. They were probably looking for weapons, you know, concealable weapons or whatever. You know, and if you were cleared, you were cleared. You went through your little metal detector, you were fine, and you went on about your day. And that's probably what they're going to do at the arena there. I'm sure they're going to, you know, step up security. People have to, you know, go through a metal detector. It isn't like the airport, not bringing luggage with you or anything. You know, just empty your pockets, put it in a thing, walk through, and, you know, go on about your day. But they're going to have to step up security. And I think that I felt this way for a few years now. And I remember I was just talking to Angie, my wife, about this, is I always felt that the baggage situation at hotels were the weakest link as far as Las Vegas security is concerned. Because you have no idea what's going into your rooms. You know, you have no idea what's going in there, what people are carrying. Baggage check, I mean, baggage claim, or that little, where you drop off your bag, it's just a security risk. You know, anyone can just walk there with a suitcase and drop something off and leave without even being a guest of a hotel. It's scary to think about. And that is where, you know, that's where they need to step up their game. I think they have, as far as, you know, their eye in the sky kind of stuff going on, the helicopters that fly around and with their infrared scans, whatever they do to detect what people are carrying with them. I mean, they have some pretty high-tech stuff in the air, but they need to check that baggage. That baggage is just going to lead to nothing but problems. As we saw, this guy was able to just, I'm assuming he didn't bring all 28, you know, 29 rifles in one day, and he piecemealed it. That's where they need to put their focus on. Is the baggage situation at these hotels. And once they do that, they'll deter it enough where it's going to make someone second guess trying to pull something like this off.
I don't know if they're going to be changing any policy or procedure, or if they do, it would be imperceptible. Because I think when you travel to Vegas, there's a certain expectation for fun, freedom. And I don't know if, you know, that's kind of this one of the selling points of Vegas. And so if they were to blatantly start searching bags and things, I think people would be turned off to it. They might put up with it for a little bit while they're scared. But over time, I think that we're going to see that drop off. It might happen now. I think I could see the Wynn stopping that procedure after a short amount of time, after a couple of weeks. And for that matter, you know, Vegas is resilient. I mean, Mandalay Bay is open. They've already reopened the casino. They're right back at it.
Oh, yeah. Of course, you know that when staff are checking bags, it's the greatest bag checking experience in the world. And I'm sure he's going to market it that way. I'm Steve Wynn. When we check your bags, we give you the best quality assurance in the world. His little piano music behind him.
Yeah.
I can see him doing that. Yeah. But I think it could be done in a way where it's just like someone meets you at the check-in line. I'll take those. Thanks. And here's your number. And they walk away. Here's a glass of champagne. They walk away. You stand at the check-in line. You do your thing. And by the time you're done, someone's there to meet you with your bags, or you just go to a place and go pick up your bags and head off to your room. I think they can do it in a way that won't. It isn't going to be like the airport. You're not going to have people looking at you funny, you know, and, you know, taking off your shoes and whatnot and standing there. I think they're just going to roll away your bags, do the check, and then roll them back. Or you can go. They can do it in a way where it won't annoy people as much. But I think
they might even pitch it as a convenience where you know your bags will meet you in the room, you know, there while you're doing the check-in process. They'll already be in your room or something like that. So
possibly, but I kind of find it hard to believe that they would open the bag outside without you being present. I think that's a big part of it too. You know, you want to make sure nothing's being put into the bag, nothing's being taken out of the bag. That leaves a lot of liability on them if they roll it away from you and search it.
It depends what they're going to put in the bag. I mean, I might not complain.
I mean, I think you had a good point, Saul, with outdoor venues. It wouldn't surprise me. And again, like I was saying, if they are going to step up security procedures, it would be imperceptible. Perhaps there would be a couple of Las Vegas Metro snipers stationed on a couple of different rooftops for outdoor concerts, just as a precaution. Yeah. Something that you're not aware of, but they're there for your safety. Heightened security definitely at outdoor concerts for the foreseeable future. Did you guys see that article over at the Daily Beast?
No, I saw something on LA Times about some of the victims from here in like the Los Angeles area.
You know, actually, that's a really good point that someone brought up to me. I was having a quick chat with a gentleman named Courtney from the Quadcast podcast, and he was saying this event isn't just a Vegas isolated event. It affects people all over the country because Vegas is a tourist destination and many of the people came from out of state. I know 7 of them came from Los Angeles, but there were 59 victims from all over the country. So this is really a national story. But yeah, there are 59 people who were killed, who were cut down at this event. Just to mention a couple of them, there was Sonny Melton, from Tennessee. He was there with his wife. Quentin Roberts, age 20. Jordan McDoon, age 23. Sandy Cassidy, age 35. She was a special ed teacher here in California, here in Los Angeles. Your heart goes out to their families and their loved ones.
Yeah, and I think one of the last names that you mentioned was Sandy Casey, the teacher from Manhattan Beach. One of the anchors from ESPN 710 radio out here in Los Angeles, the guy's kid. So, I mean, it's just like, you know, a small world. I mean, to see like how, you know, how this affects people. Like, you know, he said Los Angeles, Las Vegas, you got victims from Tennessee. You know, it's just people from all over the U.S. And that's, yeah, because of the type of festival it was, a lot of the victims are like, you know, relatively young. You know, a lot of people in their 20s and 30s.
As well as I know one police officer was killed in all of this. And again, like you were saying before, Michael, a big thank you to the first responders who were running into the gunfire to save people and who have been there all night and all day doing what they can to help people. Thank you. Thank you guys so much for this. Basically, this is just kind of my awkward way of talking about the people, just my awkward way of trying to get to, you know, there's that feeling, maybe you have that feeling if you're listening to this, of frustration, of wanting to do something. Yeah, there is something you can do. One thing you could do, there are a couple of different places you can donate that will go directly to the victims of the shooting. One of them is a GoFundMe set up by Clark County Commission Chair Steve Sizolak, and I apologize if I butchered that name. The important part to take away is if you go to GoFundMe and type in Las Vegas Victims Fund, that'll come up. A new one that came up is from Zappos, the shoe company. They have started a CrowdRise campaign, and they are going to match donations up to $1 million. And so if you'd like to donate there and get that matching donation from Zappos, I will include links to all of these in the show notes, by the way. So you don't have to write any of this down. You could just look at the show notes after the show. Another way is if you are in the Las Vegas area, you can donate blood. There were many news stories coming out today of the amazing people of Las Vegas standing in line for six, seven hours just to donate blood. But if you do live in California, I know the California blood banks are backed up several days. Kyle at whispers_Vegas was saying he looked into it and he can't get in for a few days. But if you do live in California or the Los Angeles area, that's another way that you can help. Or just do that for your neighborhood where you live. I know a buddy of mine, Tom from Jake and Tom Conquer the World podcast, he said in response to this, he was going to go to his local blood bank and just make a donation because you never know when that stuff is going to come in handy.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was reading that they are still going, like, that so far they're like scheduling people to come in for Friday because they have so much of it that they can't take really any more people. And they're booked through Friday making appointments. But they did say that in the next 2 weeks they're going to need more because not all of the surgeries are happening today or this week. So they are asking that people do try to call ahead, you know, next week to see if they still need any and then to come on down and donate.
Another thing that you could do if you're in the Las Vegas area, I know they were accepting food and water donations for the cops and the first responders who have been out there working so hard, like all day today, they were standing out in the sun, taking care of people without food, water, or rest. And so they were looking for donations for them. And again, I'll have a link in the show notes for that. Oh, here's a couple of other cool things that I found earlier today. If you are someone who can't get to Las Vegas, you have a loved one in Vegas who is in the hospital, you need a little bit of help getting there, Allegiant Air has said they will help people out. All you have to do is email them and explain your situation. They will do what they can to help you get there. And if you're looking for somewhere to stay when you do get there and you can't afford it, Station Casinos has stepped up and said they will be putting up families of the victims. And so there's been a wonderful outpouring from Las Vegas companies.
Yeah, I saw a similar thing from Binion's as well, offering the same thing for families of victims.
I also saw the same thing for the Bellagio is also offering a stay for victims, families.
And there are a couple of other things that you can do to help just where you are. Maybe you don't have money to donate. You know, this is unfortunately the fourth or fifth tragedy that this country has suffered in the last few weeks. Maybe you've donated to a lot of these other things and, you know, you just can't afford to make another donation. Couple simple things you could do. One thing is be good to people. Some of these people who commit these atrocious acts, sometimes they do it just because they feel disconnected from society. Let's be good people. Let's, you know, take our heads out of the Twitter and Facebooks and, you know, actually interact with people in real life. Smile to someone, hold a door open for someone, just in general, share some kindness out in the world. I don't know if it's going to help, but I sure as hell know it's not going to hurt. One other thing that I wanted to ask people as a favor, there's been a lot of debate going on. If you guys disagree with me on this one, feel free to chime in. There's a lot of debate going on right now about political issues, gun control, and whatnot. Keep it to yourself for a few days. Let's let the information out there on Twitter get out there on how to help the people of Vegas. The gun control issue, it's not going anywhere. We could still have this debate, and I understand the need to want to get it out there while people's emotions are high, but it does clog up people's Twitter feeds and it blocks the information that needs to be getting out there. So this is, again, my opinion, but if you could just hold off on either making those comments or retweeting things about politics and Trump and gun control and all that stuff, give it a day or two. Let the information get out there.
Yeah, definitely a time and place for the political talk and the whole Second Amendment with side you're on speech. So, you know, give it some time.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a time for politics, but this right now is not it. Yeah, totally agree.
All right, do you guys have any closing thoughts?
No, just one thing I saw before we hopped on the call was the MGM Resorts International, their stock went down like a little over 5.5%. They took a $900 million hit overnight over everything that happened. So Wow. Not that, you know, money is important right now, but I just thought that was kind of interesting to point out the impact over 24 hours.
I mean, I'll add one interesting thing that someone pointed out to me earlier today. They were watching some of the videos and they were saying that some of the people in the crowd were just so drunk when the shooter was changing clips and there was a stop in the gunfire, they would stand up and flip them off.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I don't think I could be that drunk.
Let me ask you this before we close. Do you think Mandalay Bay will keep its name, or do you think at some point, because it's the site of the shooter, do you think at some point they'll do a rebranding, or they'll just hopefully just kind of ignore it and move past it and keep Mandalay Bay?
I think they'll move forward, just kind of move past it and move forward and keep Mandalay Bay. It's kind of a touchy subject, yeah, but I think, you know, eventually I think they'll try and just move on and keep the name and not do anything drastic like change the name or try to rebrand or anything like that.
I think, I mean, there's a lot of rebranding talk on that end of the strip anyway. I hear Excalibur and stuff like that. Yeah. They can change the name. It's still going to be that shiny gold building. It's kind of like when the MGM fire happened back in the day. It was the MGM Grand, which is now Bally's, and MGM Grand went to another area and built over there and moved. And now when you think MGM Grand, you don't think of it. But when you look at Bally's, it looks the same as it did back. I mean, they didn't really change much, well, except for the shopping and stuff in the front of it. But when you look at the buildings, I mean, it's still the same colors and everything that the MGM Grand was. And you can't help but look at that and think sometimes, wow, this is where that fire was. And, you know, that's where the smoke was billowing out. And this is where people were, you know, trying to escape. So I they can change the name. I don't know. I don't think it's going to help anything. I mean, they would have to like completely change everything about that building. I think they're probably just going to decide it's just best to keep it as is and then try to move forward.
Yeah, I don't think a name change is going to change anything. They would have to change the entire facade and get rid of the whole gold facade thing they got going on to even get people to think of it as a new resort or not think of the events tied into what happened there. So,
okay. And did you give your closing thought, Michael?
No. But yeah, I think I can only relay to those who are listening, who are Vegas tourists, I'm sure, just like us, what we were told in New York after September 11, go out there, have a good time, but be vigilant. If you see something, say something.
Does either of your behavior change the next time you go to Vegas? Are you going to make any adjustments to how you behave?
No, I, you know, every time I go to a place that is known to attract tourists, I'm usually a little on guard, you know, of you know, and aware that something could happen. But it's just a way of life for me, really. So I've gotten just accustomed to, you know, just I try not to get too hammered. You know, I try to keep my senses about, you know, and you know, I'm just try to be aware of my surroundings and to be able to respond if something arises. But it doesn't prevent me from going out and having fun and meeting up with friends and, you know, enjoying Vegas. I mean, that's not a way to live, you know? So, yeah, just like I was saying, just, you know, continue to go and have a great time and, you know, see some old friends, see the sights, take in a show, have some delicious food. And, but at the same time, just, you know, just be consciously aware, you know, be consciously aware of your surroundings. And I mean, that's advice for any big city, I think.
Yeah, kind of the same. I mean, I would agree that you can't live your life in fear. And same thing when I'm in Vegas, I kind of stick to the same routines. I don't really do anything out of the normal, out of the usual for me. But if I am in a large crowd, I kind of always tend to be towards the back. So in case, you know, crap does hit the fan, we're able to kind of leave first. I don't like to be surrounded or more towards the middle. And just whenever we're doing something in a large crowd, just kind of always stay vigilant, aware of our surroundings, kind of know where everything is at, and just be as cautious as possible, really. But you're there to have a good time, and so is everyone else around you. And I think everyone's kind of on the same page and kind of looking out for each other, and everyone realizes that, you know, we're there to have a good time. Let's kind of protect each other, watch each other's back, and hopefully everyone gets home in one piece at the end of the night, you know?
Yeah, I think I'm the same way. I don't think my behavior changes one bit. I'm like you, Michael. I'm a very vigilant person as is. I got that hypervigilance, so I tend to pick up and notice everything anyway. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I have maybe one thing that I might be a little more detailed with my wife where I'm going to be, just so she doesn't have to worry. Check in with her a little more often when I'm there, because usually it's complete media blackout while I'm there. Media blackout and physical blackout. But yeah, I mean, I might do those things. But aside from that, I think my behavior stays the same. So, and I think that's one of the best things that we can do. You know, that is the city. We can't live in fear. We have to be ourselves and enjoy the city for what it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. So guys, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate having this discussion with you, especially after today's craziness that happened.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. I totally appreciate it.
And Saul, I'll see you in a couple weeks. Michael, buddy,
come on, man.
Join us. Hang out.
Yeah, that's not in the cards right now. You know, we got a puppy, and puppies cost money, and we're about to pay to get him snipped and chipped. And yeah, it's just too soon. But I'll be back out there. Looks like December. The wife and I are going to head out and enjoy the city and be vigilant, but enjoy the city and take in all the holiday scenery that'll be out there at the time. So that'll be cool.
Nice, nice. All right, Saul. Looks like me and you are heading out there in December.
That's right. We'll meet you there.
All right, guys. Thank you so much again, and you have a good evening.
You too.
Thank you too.